Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Anyway, yes, it's another one of these videos that I make. Anyway, so the theme this week is again the... You sort of just marvel at what must be going on in people's heads. So, it seems like we're all living in the same, ant farm. And frankly, we all should be able to, basically describe it the same way. It has these tunnels, and this stuff goes on and really doesn't have anything to do with me. I just do this little thing over here. You would think that interacting with the other ants and stuff, that they'd all have the same kind of story about what the reality is. But we know that, nature sort of does slate things for roles to play. And, they probably, the drone bees don't really understand the life of the queen or the, life of the whatever, whatever else, the secretaries, I don't know. There must be other kinds of jobs done, the house slaves versus the field slaves, you could argue. This whole role to play thing. And so we really don't have that kind of society anymore where you can kind of see the mechanism of a society. Like, you'd have a village and you need a doctor kind of person and a horseshoe guy, and you need a whatever roofer guy, and needs all these different little things that you'd need to have as mechanisms to make life functional. And clearly the human beings that went just west, young man, they'd have to have all that kind of stuff. They'd have to have enough knowledge to be able to fix a wheel on the wagon, and they'd have to be able to keep their horses alive, and so they'd have to have quite a bit of specialized understanding of the world they're interacting in. So now there's none of that, though. We don't live in a civilization where any of us are integral to its function. We're all easily replaced in terms of the basic, what it does. Not that we aren't, not that people aren't vitally important to some other person's capacity to survive. It's just that it's not a social thing anymore. Where the village depends on it, sort of. Anyway, that's not really the point. The point is that it's just kind of strange that, you grow up on a planet and you have certain experiences, and that people can draw such vastly divergent opinions regarding what is important, and what the truth is. Just simple things like the whole Santa Claus or Jesus or Mohammed or David, I guess. I don't know. The Jews don't have a Messiah, so, he hasn't gotten here yet, I guess. It's the theory. But anyway, Jesus, just so, you're just, you recognize that, they fooled me for a few milliseconds with that Santa Claus story, and it's pretty easy to dissect that into garbage. And the God thing wasn't, that was even less challenging in many ways. There was too many places where it just couldn't make any sense that there's some, overseer. And I'm supposed to think he's a swell guy, and he lets certain things happen right in front of me, and you're just like, well, can't be any overseer, because an overseer would make sure I didn't see that. He'd make sure that didn't happen. So that's got to be bullshit. It goes so much deeper in terms of what people's ambitions are. And so it's, I do some observing in between my gardening chores during the nice days. because, you know, that's what my brain does to figure out how to have something I can control and something, you know, that you can derive some sort of sense of accomplishment and blah, blah, blah. And it's a game I play. You know, people choose different games to play. And even that is kind of interesting to ponder. You know, the difference between a tennis player and a golfer, and, you know, these decisions people make to be something and why they become that certain thing. And, you know, and how much of that is just circumstantial. I suppose, obviously, you're not going to become much of a swimmer if you don't have access to a swimming pool. And, you know, that kind of thing. So you wouldn't know you were great because, yeah, you never tried it. Something like that. So I guess there's a lot of that that happens to people, is the limitations of the world they're exposed to or they taste. And so they choose from a very small range of choices about what to do with their life. You might argue that some of the less advanced civilizations sort of do that to women. You know, they're left mostly uneducated and mostly, you know, their job is to cling to some man and be a servant and produce children, and, you know, that's it. And it's just sort of a theft of opportunity, and you know, they're really kind of, and the religions do this a lot, you know, they're very desperate to try to keep people from seeing anything else or tasting anything else or knowing anything else exists, because they know that their philosophy, or whatever you want to call it, is easily made to look, you know, silly. You know, less than, not as good as, you know, it's not going to win the battle of ideas or even the battle of experiences. You know, the silly experience of wasting a bunch of time sitting in a church mumbling crap to a God that doesn't exist versus, you know, becoming a scientist or, you know, doing something more sophisticated and complicated, let's say, with your brain, more useful, certainly. You know, how do people end up being what they are? So, again, anyway, you know, I'm just trying to think of some way of putting that theme, okay, into some kind of useful conversation. The observation, because that sort of was the observation of the week, just how you can just look at every person and just wonder, well, is that a psycho killer? And is he thinking about the next person he's going to kill? You know, does he need to buy more lube for his, you know, his, you know, butt thrusting machine? you know, what's, you know, because they're all got a little wheels turning, you know, and you're just wondering what wheels are turning and how that crap got in their head and how they thought that was important. I mean, some asshole will go down the street speeding, you know, and the funny thing is if they see me, okay, like they have to kind of show their real men or something, and they'll go even faster, you know, and you're just like, what is that? You know, and then there's some cliche motorcycle people, you know, short men, to start with, and they have the most obscene and loudest possible. I don't even know if you could make a motorcycle louder on purpose. I mean, I don't even know if I could engineer an engine to be as obnoxiously loud. You know, I mean, it's clearly no muffler, but it's almost like you have to have some kind of unmuffler, you know, to make it that bad. And how they could have any sense of pride or self-respect, you're just saying, what do they think? What do they think? There's somebody who's actually saying, wow, that's really cool. That obnoxious noise is really cool. And then today, I saw one today. And the motorcycle was in the mid-range. Okay, it was way too loud, but it wasn't the obscenely loud. but he had a bunch of fucking Mexican music blaring from it. And you're just, you know, it's the whole earbud thing. I mean, how could somebody think this isn't rude and stupid and, you know, somebody just wants to pull out a gun and shoot you? I mean, you're just such a blight. I mean, what else do you think people have but some sort of contempt? It's funny. What is it? So you're saying, wow, there's some people that are really, really not modeling right. You know, their model of how the anthill works is really upside down if they think they're winning, you know, they're gaining points somehow by being such a douche. You know, just fact. How could they think that way? I mean, how could they, you know, how could those thoughts be generated in their stupid moronic heads? And, you know, that's the part you ponder. And you wonder, because it seems reasonable to say that the range of what people would draw as conclusions about life and how to interact and all that kind of stuff would be kind of narrower. That it wouldn't be able to get that weird and diverse where we could look at each other with contempt. At least have contempt for what our agendas are and how we behave. So anyway, that's, you know, theme for the day. But there has been a lot of people just, you know, I don't even get some of it, right? Swimming pool and the Marco Polo thing. What the fuck is that? So I didn't even understand it when I was a kid. You go to a pool party, there was something, and all of a sudden people start doing this Marco Polo. I was like, what the fuck is this shit? I still don't get it. And I never, you know, I've never learned Marco Poloism. And it just seems like it's such a strange thing to do in the first place. And then in the second place, to do it for hours? I mean, these people, for hours, these kids are screaming this shit, okay, to the whole neighborhood, right? For like a half mile, you could probably hear, Marco Polo, Marco, and you know, what the fuck is going on there? And, you know, and you're just saying, jeez. You know, I mean, you hate to call a kid retarded, but shit. You gotta be retarded if that's the best you can do in 2 hours. Damn. Anyway. So, complete waste of a pool, I'd argue. If you're gonna Marco Polo in it, they might as well just piss in it. Ugh, whatever. Alright. So, I mean, that's that why that this is the theme, is that, that there was a lot of stuff. I saw some big woman, big, sit on a fire hydrant, you know, with the plug thing, you know. And she's in spandex. So she's big, and she's in spandex, and she's sitting. I mean, I, you know, you're almost like, she, I, you know, I was actually thinking it because I had a camera right next to me. And I'm saying, you know, this really should be on the internet because it's just so funny. And you just say, you know, how do people do, you know, it just seems like just ridiculous things, and they, you know, no problem. I'm just going to sit on a fire plug because I'm tired. You know, but it's always marginally warm outside. You know, it just, no, this can't be. You know, and then some guy was walking his pit bull, and it wasn't on a leash. You're like, you know, and it's 40 feet behind him, you know, walking. And it's just like, you haven't heard of, you know, you really haven't, you're not going to take like any precautions, so you're just guaranteed to be double sued. I mean, you're not going to get just sued, you're going to get like insanely sued. You know, I mean, this is, it's just so, you know, it's like you having a picture of you looking at the wires sticking out of your tire, you know, before you go driving, you know, and you have a picture of you, look at the wires in my tire, it's so bald, the wires are showing, you know, before you go out driving, you know. And so, yeah, that's gonna look really good in court. So, you know, so part of me is saying, yeah, wow, this is really so challenging to interact with human beings because, man, they got such bullshit in their heads. And, you know, how am I going to, you know, what kind of magic words am I going to say to relieve them of some reactionary sense that I'm, he opposes me. he's out to get me. Some sort of notion that somehow I'm going to be part of some agenda, you know, that's anti their perfect world. You know, that somehow I'm going to, my excessive first do no harm philosophy is coming to get them. Yeah. Yeah, it's so scary. Ooh. You know, defend yourself, you know, be accountable. Ooh, what a terrible idea. Accountability? You mean you're going to blame people for the monstrosities they create? Shocking. So even that, there's another example right today. Five kids, maybe 12, 13-year-old kind of kids. So one kind of tall black kid and a couple that looked sort of Mexican and a couple that sort of looked maybe Jewish. You know, I don't know. It's funny. So kind of a weird little mix of five adolescents. And they come trampling down the street, you know, being loud and stupid, going to the 7-Eleven to get, you know, whatever, slushies. And they're just like, you know, it's the middle of the day, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that. You know, broad daylight on the street. And they're just looking to do pranks. And so, they go banging on somebody's door and then running away right across the street. And, you know, everybody has these doorbell cameras or some sort of camera now. Come on. So you know, you're not, you know. And they probably, like, they're walking, so you know they probably live just a street over or something. You know, and so anyway, and then when they're coming back, they're still looking for trouble, you know, so they're throwing garbage. And they decide to throw it on people's cars. And you're just like, you know, I mean, cars are expensive, blah, blah, blah. You don't throw cans and crap on top of somebody's car. I mean, it's just, would you want, you know, what, they must have mothers of some kind, right? I mean, they at least have some kind of mother. Would they want her car ruined by some punk? I mean, it was just so, you know, it's not like it's mischief night or there's some, you know, there's some sort of reasoning you could come up with. I mean, they're all kind of dorky, you know, it's not like these are hoodlums, you know, they're all just kind of nerdy, even awkward, let's just say that, a kind of, you know, awkward adolescence. They're not hip or cool, and it's just, you know, what the fuck, what's raising that? I mean, so much of this stuff you can know because, you know, we don't live in the small world. You know, I grew up in a very small world, you know, you had very little access to, you know, real-time exposure to other people failing kind of thing. And, you know, now fail videos are huge and, you know, you have all this exposure to how, you know, you can fail in life, you know, and be caught and embarrassed. And, you know, that would have been a huge incentive in my youth, obviously, I think, if I knew I was on videotape, you know. You know, and I knew I was going to get caught with some of the stupid things I did. You know, I would have been pre-humiliated if I had been able to see somebody else do something stupid and see how, oh, yeah, it really is stupid, isn't it? He could have killed somebody with that stupid antic, that little prank. You know, and you'd gain maybe more appreciation. But apparently that's not happening. So moron or stupid or, you know, the jackassery of youth is still a problem, apparently. Anyway, take a little break and see if I can Figure out how do you say, come on, we really shouldn't be disagreeing on describing this silly little anthill and what the silly little ants are doing, and making the basic point that, none of it really needs to be done, and it's very expensive, and there's a lot of ant pain and suffering. And it really can't be justified because none of the ants are knitting a crocheted blanket that's could even you could even hope to sell for $10. I mean, the whole project is just running such a deficit. I mean, there's nobody doing anything profitable. The civilization's not making any money. It's just making waste. A bunch of wasted lives and wasted ambitions and wasted thoughts and efforts and all, at the price of a bunch of chemotherapy. It's just like, no, we're just not singing good enough or dancing good enough to justify, vocal cord and hip surgery, Nope. All right, back. So, I was thinking of Charlie Chaplin, right? Just because there's a tune, like he made a movie called Limelight much later in his life, and it's very English kind of. And I mean, there was, it is a bit. It's not a, it's not a great movie, okay? But it's a nice little story, kind of sad, pathetic, all that kind of stuff. Blah blah blah. And it's that vaudevillian kind of portrayal of what was humor, and it's just not funny. And so anyway, but the music, he wrote the music, and it's just this silly little tune, do 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 And it's really, it sticks in my head, right? And so I haven't seen the movie like 7 years, and yet that was running through my head today. It's just like a lot. Like every, every time my brain had a chance, it just started playing that. And even that's curious. You're just saying, what is that about? Why? Where does that come from? Why is that in my head today? It just wasn't anything to connect it at all. But anyway, but thinking about, when I was a kid, they sit, television was pretty lame, and they would in the mornings play silent movies, so you could watch the Keystone Cops or the other guy with the clock, and you could watch Charlie Chaplin things, and I was like, I hated his movies. Now, some of them were nice themes in terms of like little puppy dogs and little stray kids, and and some of even the Nazi thing with the war and the very creative. But I just couldn't warm up to this little weird character, this little Nazi mustachey thing, and just and so it's the whole kind of identification thing, right? It's just so anti. My kind of ant. So it's like, ants and bees or ants and slugs even. I don't know if ants can watch a movie about slugs or with slugs portraying themselves as ants. So unless there's a character you can identify with, that has something to do with how you act or how you behave or how you look, you start to lose connection to it. It just doesn't, And I was like that with Charlie Chaplin. I just couldn't connect to it at all. Couldn't connect to the character. It was just clown shoes, and I mean, it was just so, it was too stupid. That wouldn't happen, kind of stuff, and you wouldn't do that, and that would, that kind of thing. And so I didn't like Charlie Chaplin much. Until I saw this movie much later and then gained some appreciation that the guy had to be pretty damn creative. That was that's sort of the moral of the story, I guess, is that I felt bad for that superficial judgment. And felt bad is kind of a silly word. But anyway, and this weird thing is that, people say this and that about who, that Charlie Chaplin got too much appreciation and the other guy got too little and blah, blah, blah. And the thing was is that Charlie Chaplin gave the other guy who was competing with him at the time, a role in his movie. So it wasn't like, the stuff the media makes a story, and the real stories are never the same, unfortunately. And what people are about. So, I mean, there's so much of that, right? God, there's so many stories where you hear one story and then you hear the real story and you wonder, well, how do they keep telling that other story? And so there's a lot of that with, what actors are assholes versus this or that. And then there's certain single facts that sort of give it away, which story is the truth. But it's even the whole history thing. When I was a kid, I was raised on this idea that it was expensive tea that was in the harbor. People were protesting, so they were throwing the tea in the harbor, blah, blah, blah. But no, it was the cheaper imported tea. And that was the reason. So it was just, it was protection, for their market, and they wanted the domestic sellers to make the money, not the foreign sellers, kind of bullshit. It was the king's tea. That was sort of the excuse. But the fact was, it was cheaper. And they didn't want the cheaper tea on the market. It's that simple. Anyway, that wasn't about taxes. It was about imports. But anyway, it just taints the whole, And so you hear little pieces like that, and it's just disappointing. That you just say, well, that's a huge character flaw. If the person was capable of that wrong, then there can't be too much right about them. That kind of part of it, where you hear somebody, well, they abandoned their kid or some other kind of crap, and you're like, oh, geez, Yeah, even if you have the worst divorce in history, yeah, you can't screw over children. That's just evil. And so we all measure each other based on those kinds of actions. So some people, so I mean, I can make that personal in a way where, some people have tried to paint me as anti-Semitic, because I don't believe a few of the details of the Holocaust are completely accurate. But I certainly have made every effort to emphasize that everything about the bigotry and putting stars of David on people and, treating people badly merely for having a religious or a heritage, having a Jewish mother, was ridiculously stupid, and evil. And so there's no empathy with any Nazi ambition at all. And that's the truth. And then, I've been called some sort of cat hater or cat killer and all this kind of crap. And I never did anything to a cat but attempt to mitigate against it being harmed. And nothing else has ever been perpetrated. There's been no other action taken in any malicious or in any reckless or any thoughtless or any sloppy way in any interaction I've had with any sentient animal, frankly. Except once. I did shoot a bird with a BB gun when I was a kid. So it's the cliche moment, right? I mean, it's just so. I mean, these are the lessons. You think people would have had these experiences and then would be more cautious and careful, in how they live their life, because they can know how silly and stupid they can be about silly ambitions and silly desires, that it you know, that something you think is worth it is not going to be anywhere close to worth it. And you'd be careful and apprehensive. And, you know, that all that bled over to, I guess I would argue, into how I had, you know, the relationships I had with women and all kinds of things, where I was just really cautious because I knew that it's a trap, you know, and that you got to make sure you want to stay in this trap for a long time, or else you're going to get trapped by the familiarity and the attachment, and you're not going to be able to let it go. So you don't have to, like, say, even a cat, you don't have to live with a cat very long to, I mean, I know I couldn't be a somebody who raises cats to give away. No, because now you become, too, you just, I don't want to use the word love, but you know, that you connect to this other being, and you start accepting each other, who each other is and what each other is, and it just becomes very almost cruel to separate you because you're buddies, sort of. Anyway, that wasn't where I was going. Bird story, yeah. So, you know, I spent years, you know, just because my parents wouldn't let me have a BB gun, for good reason, right? And so I had one friend who had a kind of a lame one, you know, and we would shoot a target, and it was barely a usable gun, frankly. You know, kind of one pump thing, and then the rich kid had one of these pump guns where you could really pump it up and really get a high velocity BB out of it. So, you know, it was sort of my ambition to get that gun, and I eventually did. So, you know, he eventually sold it to me when it was kind of beat up and, you know, all that. And so I bought it covertly, okay. And, you know, and so, you know, in the beginning, it was just this idea of, oh, you know, shooting is fun, you know, because it's this challenge. You know, can you, get better and better, and can you be perfect and all of that kind of crap, and can you figure out the wind and the bend in the gun, and you get everything, all that stuff figured out. And then, you know, one day it did, you know, for I don't know what reason, I it occurred to me to shoot a bird, and I just don't know why I did it because it's so stupid. You know, I'm the person who was cleaning up dead animals as a kid. I, you know, and people would bring me animals to, you know, try to fix and all that kind of crap. And so it's so hard for me to even understand what I think. I was just think, okay, I'm going to miss anyway. But I hit the bird, you know, and it was. So long story short, I mean, it was one of the most humiliating and embarrassing moments of my life, and nobody was there to see it except me. I just, I've, you know, it was just such a statement to myself about, well, you've achieved perfect asshole. You know, I mean, you're a loser and a jerk and a fool, and you're inadequate in so many ways, and in here you've just done something so, you know, dumb that even that little thing that you had that, you know, you might say was some saving grace in terms of how inferior I felt, I gave that away, you know, which was the fact that I was a decent person, you know, harmless, you know, that was all I had. And now all of a sudden I wasn't harmless, I was dangerous. So anyway, so just throwing that in, but maybe, yeah, maybe all those things are integral, okay, to so much more introspection and capacity to be careful about what you think and how you think and why that is so absent, apparently, in so many people. Where, you know, they can't they don't even have a concept of ridiculous, you know, because they're obviously so outside the boundaries of being anything but ridiculous. And they're proud of it, sort of, which is just so bizarre. All right. Yeah, so, all right, well, think some more. And see. All right, occurred to me. Okay, first thought was about how, you know, what I should try to do in these videos is teach the class, okay, that I wish I could have gone to in, say, the fourth grade or something, where it would have been spelled out that, you know, all of civilization is a pretense. It's really just a big clusterfuck that clearly human beings don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They're all over the place. Silly totem poles they're all bowing to. They really haven't gotten anywhere close to any kind of real perspective. And your parents are in that category. Oh, you know, they're just little cult members. You know, they're little select, wacky, you know, cultural niche. You know, they can't step out of it or step past it, grow out of it even. You know, maybe they can. So, frankly, my parents grew up. You know, the person my father was when he was 35, I guess. I think it was, but my parents had kids late. So they thought about it, which is really sad. They married late, though. They gained perspective. Okay, let's just say that. And if they had it to do over again, they would have learned, and the Groundhog Day would have been different the next day. Anyway, it would have been a different outcome if they had their life experience taught them that, yes, the choices they made weren't the right choices. And they weren't evil or bad choices, they were just ignorant. Okay. And so we should all be prepared for that, in the sense that, you know, as a kid, it should be acknowledged that if you're thinking, okay, you're broken because you don't fit in, it's the wrong way to be thinking, okay? Because you shouldn't be fitting in. Fitting in is the worst thing you can do, because anything you're going to fit to is just going to be one of these fringy niches, okay? And they're probably going to be the wrong number, right? So we basically live in a world where, you know, I would argue the fact is 2 plus 2 equals 4, okay? 2-ness plus 2-ness equals 4-ness fact. All right. And there's none of the other stories are true. So, and there really is almost an infinite. You know, it's almost as if you could pick any number, 463, and there's somebody who believes 2 plus 2 equals 463. You know, that their understanding of reality is that broken. And I would argue if you're believing in some Santa Claus, you know, it's that broken. That's as broken as to getting 2 plus 2 wrong. You know, getting the Sky Daddy thing, you know, or some other contextual statement about your reality and what humans are and what we're doing here, believing in ghosts or believing in UFOs or all, you know, it's as big as 2 plus 2. I'd argue the evidence is almost, yeah, I mean I was going to say flat earthers, you know, use them as a reference, but again, I kind of think they're all liars. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with them believing anything sincerely. They're just mess makers, you know, they're trolls. They're just trolling society and their fellow man with nonsense, because they think any kind of stirring of the pot is good, you know, or something like that. I don't know what they're thinking, actually. Being an asshole is a good thing. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, they get that 2 plus 2 wrong. Being obnoxiously stupid and idiotic is fun. No, it isn't. Anyway, so you could say this 2 plus 2 thing sort of applies to all these other obnoxious things people do, with making too much noise or smells or garbage or this or that, you know, being rude and in some way or another. And again, you know, it's the idea is that you know, it just should be something you understand growing up, that this is the world you're going to have to fight through, and that, you know, the sensible thing to state is that the fact is if you're going to bother doing this brain thing, you really got to find the right answers. You got to get 2 + 2 right, and then you get, because it's going to be critical to getting 3 + 3 right and getting 4 + 4 right, especially 4 + 4 is really, if you can't get 2 + 2 right, you're not going to get 4 + 4 right. And yeah, I've encountered this with the physics arguments, in the sense that the clingers, you know, to the traditional fables just can't see how they've broken all of their perceptions going up, okay, because they can't get this foundation right. So anyway, that led to thoughts about the fact that there were movies that influenced me, and I was thinking that maybe I should try to compile a list of the movies, okay, that you know, that in some way I saw it and I said, wow, that was you know, useful. You know, and so the one that popped into my head was Inherit the Wind. So I had read the book, but you know, the the movie really was you know, it was kind of well done. You know, Spencer Tracy and the dancing guy, and anyway, and Durwood, or whatever the hell it was, Darren. So just as this, you know, as this illustration of, you know, fanaticism and, you know, just the whole gang thing, you know, just the how corrupt people are, how much they cheat, you know, how extensive the lie is, you know, all of that, you know, so gain some perspective. So I don't know, maybe it was one of those things where it was just an affirmation of what I had been observing about people. And I guess that was sort of what the lesson of the movie was, is that, you know, it sort of was a dark conclusion. It was almost like this is the last act, you know, of failure, that you'd even have to have this argument. And in the context of, you know, knowing who Clarence Darrow was, you know, and in the whole context of defending two psycho killers, to protect them sort of from the death penalty, when, you know, why bother? But, you know, you can understand the principle of the cause that people are fighting for. And you're saying, okay, so I can write that off. But, you know, I'm just saying that the cynicism of the character didn't necessarily fit with, you know, certain challenges. But then the challenges are more of an argument, you know. And so he just was so much of a, he was so much of an arguer that he wanted the opportunity to argue almost anything. You could almost say, and so he probably took some of these notorious kind of cases just for the fact that they were so challenging. You know, how do you defend two morons that killed somebody just to prove they could kill somebody? I mean, it's just so bad. Anyway. Yeah. So that's, you know, so it occurred to me that maybe that would be useful, I don't know, in terms of getting, you know, you're just saying that what would create in a person the same effect that life had in creating me, and I'd say that those are important factors, those, you know, that bit of, you stuff in film. I mean, I'm trying to think of a way of saying the dramatizations. No, it's the stories, I guess. You know, some stories are just very, they trigger you. So that just brought into my head the whole Charlton Heston thing. Really disliked him as a person. Okay, his politics, the whole, just so moronic. And then he did these movies that were all just this, defending religion crap. I mean, the Ten Commandments and Ben-Hur. But, I mean, they were great movies. So even though, the crap that's in the movie, the movie has moments in it that are just so redeeming, doesn't matter how crappy the story actually is, because there's elements in the story that, have the message. You could argue Romeo and Juliet is another one of those things where, you've got to appreciate what would have happened, right? So, I mean, because that was the magical thing. It's like when Soylent Green, because that's another movie. So the whole thing is you're supposed to be upset that you're eating people, but that doesn't make any sense, because if it's a really good potato chip, who cares? Who cares? Does it make any difference? Oh, you made it out of dead people? Well, so what? What's wrong with that? You didn't make it out of living people. You made it out of dead ones. You didn't kill them for the purpose of making potato chips. You just efficiently ground up the dead people into potato chips. Well, that isn't so frightening. But, there was two big problems with that. When I read the book when I was too young to understand the big problems, and then I saw the movie much later, and when I could understand that, wait a minute, you can't get enough calories out of dead humans to feed anybody. That's not going to work, okay? It's not nearly enough food value, in eating the dead. It wouldn't keep the human race alive for 10 minutes. Maybe 10 minutes. I don't know, maybe 4 days. I don't know. If you took all the dead people who died this year, okay, and you ground them up into potato chips, and that was the only food source, I don't know what percentage of the human race you could actually keep alive. It would be a very small percentage, would be the argument. So it's not really a source of food. And then second is this hysterical reaction. So yeah, when I was a kid, I reacted like, ooh, it's disgusting eating people. And then later, okay, nah, it's not so disgusting. But then you think about people actually had to do it. With a plane crash movie, you could argue where they had to eat to, and ooh, that gets a little grisly. When you have to do the carving yourself, or, then it's a little, it's a little creepy if you can't turn it into a potato chip, right? So if you can turn it into potato chips, if you could just throw them into the machine and they come out potato chips, it'd be really easy. So, the end of Soylent Green is this, oh, ooh, it's horrible, they're eating people, blah, blah, blah. Compared to all the other crap in your life, that's not so horrible. The rest of it's horrible. And it has this great scene in it where, the smartest person left on the planet, so to speak, whatever, one of the last scientists or something, it's time to go. He just says, I've had it. I'm cooked. fuck this. And, he just goes to a place and they put him to sleep in this beautiful way, right? So he's, big screen TVs and he's just looking at fields and flowers and the way the world used to be and pretty, not with a bunch of smelly people on top of each other and all that kind of crap. And so he has this nice, peaceful transition out of existence. And for that alone, so no matter what the rest of the movie was, for that little kernel of reason, that 2 + 2 = 4 thing, you're just saying, wow, that was a 2 + 2 = 4 kind of storytelling. I mean, that's the fact. The truth is, why are we wasting? Why all this wasted suffering and fear and terror and all of it? when it could be done so gracefully and so cheaply and efficiently. And people have turned that into a horror story. And no, that's the, you know, that's pulling the thorn out, not pushing the thorn in. And the fact that they can't get that right, you're just like, oh, fuck. So again, it's one of those stories that just has so many mixtures in it. No, Moby Dick, another movie. You know, lots of weird shit in there. You know, but the whole theme of, you know, killing whales in the first place is just so grisly. You know, and so you're just like, well, you get what you deserve, you fuckers. You know, you mercenaries, you're getting, you know, paid to go harass some poor little animal that didn't cause you any harm. And it's almost like Moby Dick is a great hero for the whales, you know. And so you're like, yeah, you want the fish to win. I know it's not a fish. But, you know, you sort of can connect to any one of the characters because the story's told so well. And the movie, I guess, was darker, I think, than the book. But, you know, hard to say. As a read. But yeah, these things all, I remember reading Jaws, you know, and before, you know, long before seeing the movie. And, you know, the whole scene where the girl gets killed in the beginning, you know, it was hard to read. I mean, it was just, you just felt it coming and it was going to be, and yeah, it's just, you know, just to imagine it, you know. And it's the kind of stuff you just don't forget. You know, it's when I saw some stupid crap TV show or whatever you want to call it on the internet. I don't know, some whatever it was, where they were just talking about psycho killers. And we ended up talking about this Russian one who really was insidious. And, you know, he'd stab his victims first, you know, to slow them down, to make them manageable. So they had to die, you know, while this guy is raping them and doing other things to them. And through, and that was, you know, good, was, you know, and you're just saying, oh man, that's just so brutal. You know, some 10-year-old going through that is just, you know, just saying to yourself, you know, how could people make sense out of the world if that's the price you got to pay? That's the price you're paying for what? For what are we doing that's worth that price to impose that on some, you know, 11-year-old kid? Can't even, yeah. And so it's the kind of, you know, it's one of those ones where, you know, it's just so damn dark, it's so bad, and you just, you know, just like, oh fuck, you know. And you know it can get worse, you know, the human centipede or something. You know, I can't, you know, it's just
oh god damn,
you know how, yeah, there's, you know, it's not like it can get infinitely bad, but you're just surprised that somebody could come up with some idea and you say, fuck, you know, I thought I had thought of all the evil, terrible things that could happen, but yeah, that one's pretty bad. You know, yeah, that, you. So, summing up, yeah, so that's the stuff that sticks in my head, but I guess my brain is, you know, it's impressed by, I don't even know what to say. They're not negative messages, but they're just seem that they have so much more integrity as a truth. Okay, I guess is the argument, and it just makes it all so clear. And so when you compare, you know, all this silly human bullshit, you know, there's so much lie and so much fakery in it. You know, people are talking, and you know their real life is so different than the life they're posing as having. You know, it's all such pretense and bullshit and so dishonest and fake, and it's all pantomime, And the reality is the price you're paying for that pantomime, that silly little organ grinding monkey bullshit, okay, this less than beautiful ballet, ballet of the retard, the Special Olympics version of ballet, and it's just this insidious price you're paying for it. When you think of what people who are getting the worst of it, or animals who are getting the worst of it, are enduring. That just reminds me. See, those stuff pops in your head, and you say the word worst or something, and then a guy called Desert File, part of the atheist community, he had a video where some bear had got hit by a car and his leg was shit, and he's, and so apparently, he gotten into his shed or something and got some food or something, and he was wondering, he had a partial image or something, and he was wondering why the bear did this and why. Well, it's because the bear had a shattered leg, but anyway, and it's just, you're just, I mean, it was bad. It was really hard to watch when he, found the bear and videoed it. You're just, sorry. I got a cramp in my leg right in the middle of a video. I'm doing my job and, my physical thing gets in the way. Anyway, so I think that's enough of a video. And I'll think some more on some sort of, it's like making one of those videos from the 50s, where they're going to tell you how to, don't stink or something, some kind of, what do they call that? I hate that you can't think of it. They had like Miss Manners kind of versions, like what the proper manners are. You say please and thank you and do this and do that, and then how to comb your hair for a date and, all that kind of crap. And they're just so bad. And so I'm saying, well, okay, I'll just end up making some really bad description of the, the messaging, I don't think I would, but it's hard to say how it will impress somebody else, because some of the things that sent me a message, it was such a tiny portion of the thing that had the value in it. And, maybe maybe there's not enough there. Clockwork Orange comes to mind, because to me that movie sucked. I mean, I didn't understand. You can't. It's like almost unwatchable, all the gobbledygobbling talk and everything. I remember reading the book, and I couldn't even read it because I wasn't literate enough to know what the fuck anybody was saying. It had all this jargon and slang in it, and and so I didn't understand the characters at all. I didn't understand what they were thinking because it was all in this weird British jargon. But the thing that's really interesting is the whole conditioning, reconditioning thing. And, that's the part that's intriguing in terms of understanding that that's all we are, is that we are conditioned almost randomly by a bunch of random, not surgical kind of scarring and tissue manipulation. And so what are we supposed to be conditioned? What should be our reactions? As much as you think it's black and white, good versus bad, it's not black and white. The feral cat thing, for example, saving their lives is not improving their welfare. You're not doing them a favor, because they're going to die in some much worse way, and they're going to live badly before they do that. So you haven't done them a favor. Good is actually can be quite what's disguised as good is can be quite evil, almost, in terms of the negative real consequences. All right, so that's probably enough. All right, so till the next time, when I'll do more of this attempting to explain, like I said, I see it's all so clearly shit. I just, you know, it's all just, it's a bug planet, and we really haven't grown past our bugginess. I guess we shouldn't say, I shouldn't say we. Okay. No, I'd say that, yes, I'm still a bug. Okay. I mean, I can talk better than my bug nature. But my real life is still controlled by the bug instincts. I mean, that's why I do silly things like plant flowers and shit, is because I'm still a controlled, by a psychology that needs to do its duty in terms of, you know, function with some notion of project and accomplishment. And I can't live that in this work, you know, because I can't gain any of the rewards that I get when I do it with something more manageable and more functional. I mean, trying to germinate and grow human beings is so much, so it's just so unrewarding, because they all turn into weeds. You know, it's so hard to get a flower out of any of them. So, you know, it's just not very rewarding, and I need to, you know, you need to feel, your psychology needs that I hit the target feeling. It needs the sense that I'm getting somewhere, and so you have to have some sense of that, or, you know, life gets really, really tough. But anyway, just making excuses for my own distractions, and they're really just therapy. They're, you know, they barely keep me from going crazy. You know, crazier. You know, so, and that's it. You're just trying to find some way to get from here to tomorrow without too much mental dissidence and unsettledness and fear and queasiness and you know, all that negative stuff. So anyway, that's enough. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Try again. Just keep trying again until I try better again. Yeah. Working on it.